Hello there and welcome to Wild Time. With myself, Thomas Janak, the Animal Rights / World Conservation Show. Today I'm joined on Skype by Jordan Wyatt, and he has a blog called Coexisting with Non-Human Animals. And in theory, that all sounds very, very easy. And the question always is, why can we not coexist with non-human animals peacefully? Jordan, thanks for doing the interview. Why do you have this blog?
Hi, Thomas. I have my podcast and my blog just because I find it fun to talk about helping animals and meeting other people that are vegan and interested in animal rights. I don't know many other vegans where I live, and it's a good way to meet other vegans.
Okay, and have you met lots of vegans ever since?
In person, I've never met another vegan, but I've made lots of vegan friends from around the world.
Yeah, it's a bit of a problem, isn't it? I mean, you're in New Zealand?
Yes.
Here in Ireland, we don't even have any fully vegan restaurants as of yet. We have a vegetarian society, and us vegans are still looked at as being the oddballs, you know. But I checked your blog. Most of the a lot of the stuff that you put up there, apparently, you know, being a vegan, you know, is very, very critical. In a sense, you know, when you talk about the meat industry as such, and even the United Nations have now sort of confirmed that 50% of the greenhouse gases at least come direct from farming. But when you say to people like, you know, I told you so, just doesn't quite cut it. how difficult do you find it, you know, to sort of try to raise awareness and hit this wall of I don't know, this kind of I don't care.
Well, a lot of what I put on my blog is just me complaining. I whine a lot. But I do wish that people were more open. I do live in a conservative area, which is mostly to do with dairy farming, although it was also a lot of sheep farming. New Zealand, it's a stereotype that all of New Zealand are sheep farmers. It's not the case anymore. There's probably a lot more dairy farmers now having cows for milk, and it's worked out more profitable for the country, I suppose. It does affect how people feel. I mean, I've never met another vegan, and I suppose the people I talk to have never really heard of vegans before. And perhaps they only see the negative things, such as PETA ad campaigns. I'd rather be naked than wear fur, and throwing fake blood at people, and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, the funny thing is, I will be talking to Bruce Friedrich from PETA next week about these campaigns.
Okay.
You know, because in essence, they're sexist to start to begin with. Mm. You know, and we know that sexism and speciesism and racism is all the same thing.
Yes.
In a way, yet apparently, you know, to a certain extent, they do get their points across. But I absolutely agree with you that it sends the wrong picture with regards to vegans sort of being peaceful. Having said all that. In your mind, do you think it's important to get the issue back out on the street?
Yes, I do. I don't campaign much on the street as I would like to. I do often talk about veganism with people in person, although mostly it is on my blog and my podcast that I talk about veganism in my life. And I met some people at SAFE. SAFE is New Zealand's largest animal welfare group. And they find it quite difficult to promote for welfare changes here. They get quite a hostile reaction when they ask for things like bigger cages, because a lot of the people they meet are actual farmers here. And so I've always been quite scared to promote veganism in a public place here, just because I'd get such a hostile reaction. But I do my bit, and I always have pamphlets with me, and I give pamphlets to people. And I talk to them. If I don't normally bring up that I'm vegan, I don't shout it off the rooftops, although I do have some t-shirts and things that say that I'm vegan. And I hope that if people are interested, I'm very happy to talk to them about it, but I don't shout, I'm vegan at everyone I meet.
Yeah. But the interesting thing really is that, you know, when I the way I define really veganism is just being compassionate towards all beings. And this, in essence, is a very good thing. I mean, I'm only a vegan for about 3 years. So it took me ages. I'm 43, so it took me ages just to get the message. But ever since I got it, I'm not really that understanding towards meat eaters in the sense that I think, you know, it's a typical human reaction to look at you and say, oh yeah, he's a vegan, there's something wrong with him, rather than waking up and saying, like, well, maybe, you know, maybe we shouldn't be doing what we're doing, since it has a gross effect. And not only on animals. If people say, well, I don't care much about animals, but they do care about their kids, then they have to make sure that the planet we live on is sustained. And that doesn't, and that is obviously something that's not going to happen if you continue meat farming, you know.
Well, I always prefer to focus just on the ethical reasons, though. There are many reasons to be vegan, but I do like to focus just on the ethics mostly.
Yeah, I also think, like, you know, that unless you do it for ethical reasons, you might not stick to it. You know, if you become, you know, I have friends that sort of, when they had a girlfriend and she was vegetarian, they became vegetarians. You know, but just basically because she wouldn't cook for them, I suppose. You know.
This is quite interesting. I've always heard the stereotype is that there are many, many female vegetarians and vegans, but in New Zealand, at least, it seems that there are almost, I'd almost say that there are more male vegans that I know of than there are female vegans here.
Oh, that's good. I never heard that, because most of the time when I speak to vegans, they tend to be female here.
Okay.
You know? There's not that many male vegans I know of.
There must be something, you know, in the water here. We might be unique in the world.
probably. So, but the interesting thing is, you know, when it comes to sort of veganism, I just like I said, you know, unless you do it for ethical reasons, where you say, I just think it is wrong to take a life and to really or play down that the animals want to live just as much as I do. Mm. You probably do not stick to it. And yet, you know, I'm actually, you know, in a few minutes here, I'm going to an event in Dublin where the arguments against carted deer hunt are presented. I sometimes wonder, why do we have present arguments against deer hunting? Shouldn't it be normal to not hunt, since it's not a necessity and it's just a so-called sport? You know, there's something wrong, I think, with how people think.
With this hunting in your area, do the hunters have any? Do they have a reason that they claim for it?
I hope I meet them.
Population reasons or something like that?
Not at all. I mean, we have cullings going on every now and then.
Okay.
You know, there's a park here called Phoenix Park, and they have sort of deer that runs wild. And apparently there was an uprise or an uproar in population, so there were cullings. But this is just plain hunting with hounds. But this is just done for sports, which also, you know, even though I'm not a fan of culling at all, because I think, like, you know, you have to manage them properly, so there is no culling really, you know. But I do hope that I meet sort of the pro hunt people today as well, because I really want to see, you know, what causes them to really go abroad, and they're quite aggressive towards people like myself that sort of try and highlight it, because they're like, you know, I don't want to be preached to. Don't tell me what I should be doing, you know. So I'm trying to find that out, hopefully today, you know. But it's really interesting. I mean, in the Western world, you know, whatever, however you define that, you know, there's absolutely no need whatsoever, you know. And it's the same thing with hair coursing, whatever you have.
It's interesting the differences between the two countries. In my show that I'm recording at the moment, I'm talking about duck shooting season, which is a New Zealand thing. Is duck shooting a big thing where you live?
No, actually it's not.
We have more
problems with...
Did you say hare coursing and hunting deer?
Yeah, yeah.
We don't really have either of those where I live, although out in the middle of more rural areas they do shoot rabbits. It just seems to be a cultural thing where I live, shooting ducks for no real reason.
I mean, you know, the island, for instance, is a real country that... basically, you know, the survival often depended on farming.
Yes.
And so I've been living here for 10 years, and people say to me, like, you know, go back in Germany if you don't like it. They get really aggressive towards me because I happen to have this radio show. Would be different if I would be Irish, in a way, you know. So there's this element of don't tell me what I should be doing or shouldn't be doing. So that's just one thing. I mean, the problem that we also have with regards to our water birds is that, you know, there's not many bins around. And if there are bins around, not everybody uses them. And then the canals and all the things we have are not drenched often enough. So we have plenty of animals throughout the year that die from plastic bags and all that kind of stuff. And so it's a very dirty country. I always give out about it because, you know, it's called the Green Island. And I love the Irish to bits because I've been living here for 10 years. I wouldn't go back, you know, to Germany at all. I really love it here. But the disregard for wildlife by just dropping everything is just mind-blowing, you know.
It's kind of interesting, I suppose. It makes you think of a more international perspective. I live at the bottom of New Zealand at the South Island, and just south of where I live is an even smaller island called Stewart Island. And on Stewart Island, it's a sort of it's a national park, the whole island really. And rubbish floats all the way from South America and lands on the beach all the time. There's all sorts of things in Spanish that have came all the way from South America. All the rubbish floats forever, though. It goes everywhere.
Years ago, I talked to a gentleman, you know, who was a welfare or animal rights activist in the UK. And he really said, like, you know, all these plastic cups that you have, okay, you know, they last for 400 years. Mm. It takes them 400 years just to dissolve. You know, and they're everywhere. So that's a bit of a problem that I think, like, you know, that the people do not connect the dots. They all go out on a Sunday and they enjoy looking at the swans. And then they read in the newspaper, and we have the Irish Wildlife Trust, we have Birdwatch Island. And there's not a week that goes by without them saying to people, you know, stop littering. So it is a bit of a problem. The other problem that we have here recently is that, for instance, the zoo, which is always a double-edged sword, but the Dublin Zoo, I found over the years, you know, usually was much better than the zoo in Frankfurt was. But what they do now, they have a city farm, and it's now closed at the moment. But when they open it again, they want to do live sheep shearing, and kids can milk cows. Okay. And you kind of think, like, you know, how stupid is that, given that the problems that we have really come from farming, and it really sends the wrong signal. But now there's a real campaign here, you know, you have sports stars that says, I'm behind the Irish Dairy Council. So, you know, they are well aware that people are waking up, so they do everything in their power, you know, to have these big banners, and people here are big into sports that they love, or, you know, everybody wears a jersey here.
In New Zealand, we have campaigns with sports stars, especially female sports stars, advertising red meat. Eat New Zealand beef and lamb and how good it is for you. And they're dancing around to the song. I think the song's name is We Love to Boogie. It's a T-Rex song before I were born. And apparently the main singer, I've just forgotten his name, he was apparently vegetarian. And
so Mark Bolan.
Yes, that's right. Thank you. So it's really odd to think that, you know, they're promoting meat with a song sung by a vegetarian.
Yeah, and if he were alive, he would never have given his consent.
Oh, you'd be furious.
The problem, I think, that we're facing, and in your blog, I think you actually touch on it, because basically, you know, you have a podcast as well. So, you know, here you are giving out the message, and often, to a certain extent, I think that's true, we sort of pray to the converted.
Yes. It does.
And that's difficult, isn't it?
It is difficult. I find it's much easier to talk through people, obviously through audio, than getting people to read, especially if you write a lot. So I always try and make my podcast short and to the point, and hopefully it's easy to listen to.
I mean, I dragged you down, so to speak, through your blog and through Facebook. So if people really want to get in touch with you, that would be easy enough. Do you have ever had people that says, look, I'm a meat eater, but I'm really interested in your message. You know, what is it you really want? Do you have interaction?
I have met a few omnivore people, omnivorous people. although mostly the people that contact me are vegan already.
Yeah, that's a bit of an issue, isn't it? Because that's the thing that I find very difficult. You know, I spoke to a gentleman, Dr. Will Tuttle, and he says that basically, you know, the whole idea about veganism is to be inclusive, because you include compassion for all life. And so having, you know, my show, you know, is an animal rights show. It's not a vegan show. Yet I often end up talking about it because it's the one thing that would make life so much better for animals. But then it becomes a vegan show. And people think, oh, here he goes again about veganism. But I think it also just gives them ammunition to not listen, because, you know, it's like, I'm a meat eater, you're a vegan, we just don't mix well. And so that's difficult. I mean, how about, you know, with your family? Are you the only vegan in your friend, sort of with friends and family? Or is your whole family vegan?
Yes, I am the only vegan in my family that I know of. I have a couple of vegetarians that distant relatives that are vegetarian, which is nice to know. It's sort of a good feeling to know that it's that it's in the family, and that others in my family also at least think a little bit like me. My father worked at a slaughterhouse for over 10 years, and so probably a lot of my family have been working at slaughterhouses. We call them freezing works here in New Zealand. But I do have some vegetarians that I'm related to.
And that's also interesting, you know, because when you talk about your father working in a slaughterhouse, you know, he raised you well, obviously, so he's not the devil.
No.
You know, because there's this idea, you know, you know, I actually said it in one of my shows that if I ever were to look for a new girl, the universe would send me the daughter of the butcher. Because he's usually the guy I take issues with, you know. But it's interesting that we would just have the opportunity to explore this, because, you know, in essence, your dad is a good man.
Well, yes. Well, people that work at slaughterhouses, and, you know, they're still people after all. I mean, they're not the devil anyway.
But when you sort of turned vegan, did it cross your mind? Did you envision it and say, like, you know, your own dad sort of killing animals? Even though, I mean, you know, let's face it, it's a demand, so it's a service to the community. But were there times where you just found it difficult to say, like, you know, what's he doing, and why am I so the other way?
I've always found it difficult. I'll never be able to be okay with it, of course. But we're just very different people, and I guess you say about being inclusive and things. I mean, he says that I wouldn't be able to change how he feels, and I know there's no way he could change how I feel. I know that this is just who I am. I feel it's wrong to hurt an animal, and so why would I pay someone else to do it when I couldn't do it myself? I suppose most people, I think really everyone is essentially vegan or has the potential to be vegan. I think veganism is easy, and it's probably... it's just a matter of sort of brainwashing that you grow up around people that are not vegan, and it becomes normal to be not vegan, isn't it?
Yeah, it's conditioning, you know, and there's a big industry behind it, apparently. But it's still nice to see, you know, for all the people out there that sort of hear me give out about it a lot. It's still nice to have someone here that I can talk to that is a vegan from the heart and has a father who used to work in slaughterhouses and you know, and they still get along in a way. So I think, you know, this give and take thing apparently probably helps, because there's a family bond. But also, you know, you have the opportunity to at least discuss it. What I find a lot is, because you sort of speak out against an industry, as it were, they just completely shut you down. They just see you as someone, oh, you know, you don't like butchers, so I'm their enemy, in a way. So it's a really sort of tough thing, you know, that goes on between meat eaters and non-meat eaters, in a way that they always feel breached to. You know, yesterday, for instance, on Facebook, I came across a picture of an injured chicken, I think it was, or something along those lines, just before slaughter. So, and I posted a picture because it affected me. And then the first thing I got was abuse, like, oh, yeah, don't post this on your wall, I don't want to see that stuff, you know, don't breach to me. And I was like, well, you know, I can post whatever I want, delete me if you want to. Yeah, but looking the other way is part of the problem.
Well, yes. I mean, it is amazing. I almost can't believe I wasn't vegan before. And so I think the more people that talk about veganism, like I try to, and I encourage everyone to talk about veganism and have a podcast or blog of their own. It's so easy to do, and it makes you feel like you're at least trying to be effective. And if only I'd learnt about veganism sooner, I think a lot of people would be vegan already if they'd only been talked to about it.
But the very fact that you are vegan and I am vegan, and we have done it sort of, we weren't born this way, and there's more and more of us, so to speak, is probably a good sign. You know, I mean, people are very slow in waking up. Everything, you know, I mean, evolution and change is always a very slow thing in a way. But at least there seems to be, at least I hope, some sort of an awareness or an awakening, even though it's very slow.
I definitely think there are. I definitely think the number of vegans will only increase. I don't really imagine it decreasing, and I think it's just going to become a bigger and bigger thing. Before I was vegan, I don't know if I'd really heard about veganism, but I'm trying to do everything that I can. I write into the local newspapers, and I talk to people on the street, and I have my other little activism things. And I think just the more people hear about veganism in, you know, a non-threatening way, the more they'll get used to the idea, and it'll become more normal, and then there'll be more vegans, of course.
But the good thing is, I mean, you know, with the internet these days, like I said, I'm in Ireland, you're in New Zealand, your blog can be accessed worldwide, and your podcast can too. Could you just give us the website address and the podcast address so people can access it if they so wish?
Sure. I have the blog for the podcast, and the address is coexistingwithnonhumananimals.blogspot.com. And you can find the podcast and subscribe to it on iTunes. Although it's also linked to on the blog, and you can download.
Okay, so there's a link on the blog. That's always good that there's a link on the blog. And so how do you see yourself progressing with this? Are you exploring other routes? Saying like, you know, maybe if the podcast doesn't work. Hang on, Hogan, I'm coming. See, that's my parrot. Did you hear him?
Yes.
I know he can hear me, you know.
Okay.
So probably we have to end this in a minute.
Okay.
So are you exploring other routes? Relax.
I've found my podcast has been working quite well. I think it's been quite effective, and I've noticing a lot of other people podcasting now, and I like to mention those people. And I think in many ways, podcasting is the best way to promote the message because it's non-intrusive and there's no cost to it. It doesn't cost me anything to record an episode. It doesn't cost anyone to listen to it. Wherever they are in the world, they can get it. It's not like a piece of paper that you have to hand out to people.
And they can copy it and share
it. Yes, exactly.
I'm coming. Anyway, you can hear this is not going too well with the guy down there. You know, he's a rescue parrot. And he gets very annoyed when he hears me, you know. And it's not up here with me. So, it's okay. Well, anyway, in the background you hear Hogan, my parrot.
What kind of bird is he?
It's an Amazon parrot.
Okay.
And I got him from a rescue, well, I rescued him from a pet shop. Someone came in and cut off its beak. And I'm a holistic animal healer, so I worked on his trauma. And we ended up keeping him. And so, yeah, he's a good guy. He probably outlives me. You know, he can live up to 60 years.
Wow.
So anyway, thank you so much.